KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You know, I came into this business very shortly after video launched, and it was the end of civilization.
Paramount Pictures chairman and CEO Jim Giannopoulos has weathered some big storms in the movie business, though nothing compares with COVID. But even as productions struggle and theaters are shuttered, Giannopoulos has faith that one fine day, people will go back to the movies.
You might have a big screen TV, but you don't have a 50-foot big screen TV. And basically, people want to get out of the house.
Giannopoulos tells us about running a film studio during a global pandemic and explains how he decides which movies go to streaming and which ones he's waiting to put in theaters. He also recalls begging Joe Biden to run for president in a 2018 meeting with other Hollywood heavyweights. But first on the news banter, with Wonder Woman to go, day and date, Warner Media lassos its wagon to HBO Max. Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my buddy in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So we have seen, you know, we our guest this week is Jim Giannopoulos, the head of Paramount. And as we talked, Warner had not made this gigantic move that is a big deal, which is shifting Wonder Woman 1984 to HBO Max on the same day that it will open in such theaters as are open for business. So I didn't get to ask him specifically about that, but certainly we can talk about what a big deal it is. This is a movie that certainly cost over $200 million. I would guess well over. There is huge talent, obviously. Gal Gadot and Chris Pine, director Patty Jenkins, all of them would have had a piece of whatever box office this generated. The last one did over $800 million worldwide. All of that has to be worked out. And so I'd like to know more about how. And I'd also like to know about whether this works, because it is a huge deal to take a movie of this size. No studio has done this and put it on HBO Max. You're sort of challenging the theaters by doing it the same day. I mean, not sort of, you're absolutely challenging the theaters. And you're taking a potential huge box office hit and gambling, I guess, to see whether you're going to get enough subscribers to make it worthwhile. And I don't know that we'll ever figure out whether it is.
Importantly here, this is something that the other studios haven't really done. All of the pre-branded massive billion-dollar blockbusters of 2020 have moved to 2021. And the question then is, why did HBO Max get this movie? And it speaks to the very specific challenges that are facing Warner Media. First of all, yes, the pandemic, and they had moved this movie a couple times, and finally they just said, let's put it out. But most importantly, HBO Max is the future of this company. They have said it. They said they're going all in on this Netflix competitor, taking the HBO infrastructure and creating a broad consumer streamer to try to compete with Netflix. And so far, 6 months in, it has not been a success. They have had no breakout hits on a massive scale, and they need something. They need something that not only will be noisy, but will be distinguished from what's on HBO. This is exactly that. It's a $200 million investment in something that is fresh and original for HBO Max. We'll be there on Christmas Day when everybody's getting their brand new TV, their brand new Apple TV, and they're going to try to get a bunch of subscribers. Whether they'll stick around, we don't know. But this is it. This is their we're all in moment.
Yeah, their throwdown. Jason Kilar, of course, the head of Warner Media, was like, we love theaters. I don't think theaters are feeling the love right now. And I think, again, this is a risky, risky game. Certainly if you're a studio, like if you're part of NBC Universal or Disney, where you have theme parks, you know, we have yet to see that someone can come up with an original thing. And Wonder Woman is not is a sequel at this point. So it's not, a test case. Nobody has really put an original movie on a streamer where it became so huge and so much part of the culture that you make a theme park ride based off of it. I don't know what it can be done. There is a lot of clutter and noise in the streaming world right now. I don't know that anything can really hit that way outside of a theatrical showcase. And therefore, I think this is a big risk. We see a lot of playing with Windows. Matt, you know, you can talk a little bit about what Universal's doing in terms of Windows, but they're not doing day and date. They're not doing the same day in theaters and streaming.
Yeah, but think about this for the overall health of Warner Media. They are in a big standoff right now with Roku. Roku does not enable HBO Max, and they are negotiating with Warner Media, and they really want to make a deal. This is something that consumers may say, we need to have HBO Max on our Roku in order to watch this. And it could force Roku's hand into getting carriage, so to speak, just like Rupert Murdoch did in the early 90s with the NFL, where he got the NFL on Fox stations. All of a sudden, everybody had to carry the Fox stations of his fledgling network. So this is just that for the digital age. And as far as the windowing goes, yes, everybody is playing around with the windows. And Universal this past week now has a deal with the Cinemark chain to put movies in theaters, but allow them to go to premium video on demand after 3 weekends in theaters for certain movies, or 5 weekends if it's a higher grossing movie. And that's a big movement on this front. They already did a deal with AMC. Now they have Cinemark. This is the direction things are going.
And of course, Matt, we'll never know. This is frustrating for all of us with the streamers, and not just us, but generally people who want to be, you know, involved with these companies. We will not know how many subscribers they would have gotten anyway, how many subscribers stick around. This is just really something I've been curious about for a long time. You know, I keep sort of hearkening to Netflix paying all that money for Marty Scorsese's film, The Irishman. Did that work? Was it worth it? Will this be worth it? As you have said on Twitter, Matt, they are basically foregoing probably $1 billion in box office for this. So I was going to say we'll see how it turns out, but we actually won't. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. When Jim Giannopoulos left Fox in 2017 to take the top job at Paramount, he found a weakened studio that had been through a string of flops. As he worked to rebuild, Giannopoulos has found success with hits like A Quiet Place and Sonic the Hedgehog. Meanwhile, he's had to deal with massive changes at the corporate level as Paramount's parent company, Viacom, was combined with CBS in 2019. At the same time, the digital revolution has been hitting full force, with the business consolidating and the big media companies undergoing transformative reorganizations and strategy shifts. And then there's a pandemic. Today, Giannopoulos joins us to talk about how he's running a studio in the midst of all this. But first, I asked him about another top-of-mind topic, the presidential election. Jim has been a staunch Biden supporter from the start. In 2018, before Biden had decided to run, Jim met with him in Jeffrey Katzenberg's Beverly Hills office. This was months before Biden would announce his candidacy.
It was pretty clear he hadn't decided. He was leaning that way, but we sort of literally ganged up on him. And we just beseeched him and said, look, this is your time. You know, he expressed some reservations about what it would mean for his family and obviously was still, you know, mourning his son. But, you know, I think he was inclined to do it, but he wasn't ready yet. Or at least that was the takeaway we all got. But we all sort of said, come on, Joe, this is important for the country. And then he did. He spoke very eloquently on the subject of disunity that the country was facing and the need to bring it back together. So, you know, hearing him speak about that just fueled us even more to encourage him to jump in. And of course he did. I think it was about 6 months later, which was wonderful. And obviously the result is even better. So
now we still have, no concession from Donald Trump and an increasingly alarming noise about coming from the Biden campaign. And I don't mean noise in a disparaging way, about the urgency. And in terms of, we have had good news just now in terms of vaccines. So increasingly urgent to worry about, give us access. We need information. We need to plan the rollout of this vaccine. It doesn't end, I guess, you know, it's the election won, but the war goes on.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you weren't convinced of Joe's statesmanship before, just witnessing his sort of, you know, patient, even tempered demeanor, even as he's raising the challenges now. I mean, I don't know how many of us could have withstood having won, gone this difficult road, finally succeeded, and being treated this way. you know, in violation of every historic norm and precedent. And yet, you know, he's maintaining his demeanor and plowing forward, getting the work done. And I think that also speaks to the other reason I thought that he was an ideal candidate was, you know, 30 years in the Senate, 8 years in and around the White House, you know, the ability to hit the ground running, which many others without that level of experience would find more difficult. And it's difficult enough.
You know, Hollywood is generally involved in these campaigns. And one of the perks is to go to the inauguration. And I don't think you're going to get to do that, huh?
Well, I think it would have been a great crowd in other circumstances. Certainly, I think it could have been a record crowd. But yeah, in this environment, you know, I think a virtual inauguration may be the norm, maybe the current norm.
You're going to go on your driveway and honk your horn?
So, yeah. There'll be a lot of cars.
So let's turn to the impacts of the pandemic and generally the business. I mean, we have seen this collision of the pandemic plus the changes that were afoot already because of the digital revolution that's been underway for a while now. I mean, the business seems to me to be transformed in a way that's, we don't quite know what the impact will be. You guys haven't had a layoff, pandemic-related layoff. You were pretty lean going in, I think.
Well, Paramount was pretty lean. It had been downsized over the years, and we rebuilt it. But across the company, when you looked at Viacom and CBS after the merger, there were, sadly, quite a few redundancies. So a lot of the downsizing took place post-merger. And so we haven't needed to do it. And to the extent that it was needed at the Viacom CBS, that was part of the integration process that happened that was already planned pre-merger.
So let's sort of go back to where it starts, the pandemic. You had Lovebirds.
Right.
That's the movie with Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae. But you had done your campaign more or less, and that was the first one that would have gone into theaters and gotten slammed by the theaters being closed?
Exactly. And we weren't in full season on the release on the marketing campaign, but we were about to push all the buttons. And then the theaters all closed and we saw it coming. And discussion with our partner, MRC, decided that it made sense for the movie to be seen, but it wasn't going to be seen in theaters for quite some time. And Netflix came along and it was an opportunity. So we availed ourselves of it. Look, you know, part of the difficulty that the industry faces and we faced in looking at our schedule and looking at the impending closures and then all the theaters closing, not just here, but around the world. And we were faced with the reality that we had a full slate for 20, in fact, an excellent slate, which was the sad irony of it, and a full slate already planned and in shooting or in various stages of production for 21. So we're faced with the reality of no theaters in 20 and 2 years of movies crammed into one and facing the fact that all our competitors had, you know, the same scenario, making for a very congested 21 as soon as theaters start opening, whatever it is. So, you know, that was part of the thinking that, you know, we needed to figure out, well, where are we going to put all these movies and how are we going to date them effectively to let them have their full measure of opportunity. And then there were films, and one of the ones that I, you know, was really sad to let go of was Chicago 7.
Which went to Netflix, yeah.
But that was a movie that, if there ever was a movie pre-election, I mean, that needed to be seen before the election. And as we got ready, we watched the summer and you know, things not letting up, in some cases getting worse, and contemplated a fall release, we realized, look, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah, Sacha Baron Cohen had, of course, two movies, that one plus the Borat movie. And he wanted both of them to go out before the election and insisted.
Well, certainly Chicago 7. And look, Sacha certainly felt that way, but we all did. I mean, we all felt that this was a timely film. And it didn't, you know, it wasn't something that we felt should be postponed, for that reason.
Now, the movies generally seem to fall broadly into a couple of different categories. There's the really big ones. And in your case, you're talking about A Quiet Place 2 or Top Gun Maverick. These are very expensive, big budget movies. And I think that across the studios, there's a consensus that these movies simply cannot be streamed as a general proposition.
Look, both of them. Quiet Place was, if you believe the tracking, and look, even if you discounted the tracking, we were on the verge of a release in March. And, you know, the tracking research on that film was through the roof. The first film obviously performed really, really well. And this was another, you know, much bigger movie, but just an absolute great film. And the expectation of it was enormous. And so we had to pull it at the last minute. But this is a film that belongs in theaters. And Top Gun is, look, everybody says it, we love all our children, but Top Gun is as good a movie as this studio or any studio has ever made. And so those are films that really do deserve
But when you say deserve, Jim, I mean it deserve, but also financially, it would be suicide, would it not, for studios to be taking movies of that kind? If it's Fast and Furious movie at Universal or something, Avengers at Disney, there's no proof at this point that a movie can break out as a streaming event the way that a movie can break out on a movie screen.
Well, there's two levels to that. You're right, of course. As a streaming event, you know, it depends on the streamer. They can eventize it for their subscribers, but financially and for its purpose and intent and all the effort that the filmmakers put into it, you know, it does deserve to be in theaters. So, you know, as far as the financial components, you know, we get incoming, you know, from time to time from various streamers saying, would you be interested in this? And would you be interested in that? And, you know, we could really make a big offer and just no, thank you, not interested, not for this one. But for streamers, you know, to make a big statement competitively as well as for their own subscribers, you know, they are willing to stretch, but both financially and in terms of the potential in theaters and the intent for the film to be seen in theaters, it doesn't make sense for us. So those are the kinds of movies that, you know, you want to wait and see.
But we're not at a place where we think theaters are just, they could die and everybody would be okay.
You know, having seen, you know, I came into this business very shortly after video launched, and it was the end of civilization. You know, you went from three networks that you had to be on the couch at 8 o'clock to watch whatever show you liked, to being able to see thousands of movies for a couple of dollars at the store down the street. And it was the end of theaters, the end of civilization. Similarly, when pay television and multi-channel television, and certainly when the internet and digital expanded, you know, it was, why should anybody go to the theater? Well, because it's a very unique experience, and it's a communal experience. It's an immediate experience. And it's something that you know, you might have a big screen TV, but you don't have a 50-foot big screen TV. And basically people want to get out of the house.
I do right now, right about now. We put it that way.
We all do. So, you know, will theaters unfortunately have to weather some difficulties financially? That's an understatement. That's a reality of one of the many, you know, terrible impacts of this pandemic. But I don't see it as the end of theater going by any means. And people may be more selective about certain movies. But I think theater going will return just as it has forever. And I think, you know, cinema started there, cinema continues there. And, you know, it's oft repeated, but that's the nature of truisms that they, you know, they tend to endure. And I think theater going will.
Coming up after a short break, Paramount chairman and CEO Jim Giannopoulos says that after a painful pause, filming Mission Impossible is no longer an impossible mission. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Jim Giannopoulos, the head of Paramount Pictures. When Jim and I spoke, it was just before Warner Media announced that it will debut Wonder Woman 1984 in theaters and on HBO Max at the same time. Paramount is still holding back its potential blockbusters, Quiet Place 2 and Top Gun Maverick, with plans to put them in theaters next year. But the studio has sold smaller movies to streamers. Whenever there's a big star or major filmmaker involved in a project, the decision to move to a streamer raises a big question. How to compensate the talent when they originally were going to get a share of box office revenue? And this is a thing that applies going forward, not just, you know, I know you talk about pandemic rules and I understand they're special, but you have to buy talent out if they have any kind of piece of the back end of the profit of the movie. How does that work? Seems like it must be a complicated negotiation.
No, it's not. It's not usually. I mean, you know, ultimately, talent has two components, the fee up front and their participation in the revenue stream. And so, you know, when we do make a decision, however reluctantly, because obviously we'd rather have put it in theaters as originally intended. But if we do make a sale to a streamer, it is because the financial deal is an attractive one. The cost of the movie, the cost of any marketing, all the financial commitments that we've made, and hopefully, presumably, definitely a bit of profit. And so what we do is we take that and put it in the revenue stream, and talent, here's your share, and we keep what's left, which is the way of the world.
So going forward, an agent with very big stars is talking to me about a deal at another studio. I won't say it so it's not awkward. I'll say another studio where that studio would not commit to theatrical release. And this is a movie that hasn't gone into production, obviously. They were negotiating. And that agent told me we walked away. We were not interested. Do you think that you will be willing to say theatrical? Because we're seeing, you know, we're seeing NBC Uni, we're seeing Disney, we're seeing Warner Media. They're all saying, we're going to have you come in through the front door and then we'll decide where your thing goes. Unless you're a huge, giant talent who can be like a demand, I demand this. But generally, that's been a model that these places are pursuing. You know, so I guess what I'm wondering is, does Paramount have a differentiating trait in this respect? Like, we will do theatrical, or we reserve our right to decide?
Yeah, as we experienced during the pandemic, circumstances may warrant either there's circumstances like this where you don't have the theaters, or you see a film and somebody comes along and says, you know what, it suits our programming needs perfectly, and may well be our own streamer platform, that you want to make that choice. But, you know, our first and foremost and primary on the film side agenda is to make a full slate of theatrical releases. So that's the intent going forward. You know, there are occasions in which you want to, in concert with your filmmakers, you don't want somebody being upset or cranky about it. But, you know, there may come circumstances where you make that choice.
They might get upset and cranky. You never know.
But look, we all are focused, and much of the talent is as well. As much as they're driven financially, they're also driven creatively and emotionally to see their films in theaters. And so are we.
Yeah. I mean, generally. We've had some people who say they like to be on a streamer because they think it's more accessible to more people. So that's usually the smaller movies.
Well, there are movies that actually benefit from that. Art films, for example, that may not be seen in parts of the country or in parts of the world, that can easily be accessible to an audience that may appeal to, but don't warrant a theatrical release in some small town or in some part of the world.
So when you make that call, there's also a question because, you know, one of the distinguishing characteristics, I think, of Paramount and Viacom CBS is we supply others. We're not just supplying ourselves. So again, that's a conversation. We have an offer from Amazon or Netflix. So do you sit in a room and decide this? Like, we could sell this to these guys or we could keep it.
Yeah, well, that's a conversation that takes place at I would assume, every company in the industry. There right. are some that have felt to the need to, or that strategically have decided to keep everything behind the wall. I think in our case, you know, there's so much content between all of the units of Viacom that pre-existed, certainly Paramount with all its library, but then all the units of CBS and Showtime and so forth, that there's enough, more than enough content to keep the subscribers of Paramount Plus happy and still sell to others as well. I mean, no platform that I'm aware of needs all of the content all of the time forever. And so, you know, it makes sense to balance the need to have a vibrant, broad offering on the streamer platform with the opportunities afforded by third-party sales. And if you do that strategically and thoughtfully, I think you can serve both of those strategic agendas.
I think you actually said in this talk you gave recently that these kinds of sales have been a sustaining thing for Paramount.
Well, during the pandemic, yeah.
Yes.
We actually we're having a really good year for reasons we'd rather not have. When you're not releasing movies, you're not spending a lot of money on marketing. When you're in hiatus, as the industry was for 6 months, give or take, you're not spending a lot making movies and television. You know, our television division was on hiatus along with everyone else. So we've only gotten back late summer and early fall, we got back to business. But when you're not releasing movies and incurring all the marketing costs, when you're not producing as much as you'd like to, and at the same time, when home media utilization, including, you know, sales to streamers, but certainly all our catalog was up like 85% this year. So, you know, you actually do pretty well, but not for reasons you'd like. You'd rather be making and delivering your television programming and making and releasing movies. But yeah, circumstances require, you know, ability to adapt.
And let me just ask how much you've been able to get back into production.
Well, we finally got Mission Impossible back in September after being shut down 2 days before a massive action sequence, which we had meticulously planned in Venice during Carnival. So we had to reconfigure a huge production that was spanning 5 countries. And we did. They did. with our support and help. And so we're back up and going. And so we have 3 movies going now. Just finished shooting on the Scream movie, which we reacquired that franchise, and another film we just in the middle of. And television is back up with 4 shows shooting now. So, yeah, with COVID supervisors and zones and, you know, all the guild
yes.
agreements that we all and safety protocols that we all agreed to and everybody's living with.
Which adds so much to the budget, of course.
Well, it does add to the budget, but we're managing it. You know, it's taken a lot of effort by a lot of people, not just our own employees, our labor people and production people, but certainly all our filmmakers and all the great crews that, you know, have had to adapt.
So just to get, you know, to look forward, we are hearing that hopeful vaccine news, maybe rolling out with, you know, for the beginning group to get the vaccine before the end of this year, we're hearing. What do you think? When do we get to go back to the movies?
Well, theaters are opening. Some places in Asia, you know, we just had 2 huge films, and one in Japan and one in China, which were record-breaking results because the theaters are back open and the local movies are being embraced, both because people want to go back to the theaters and because the films were good, presumably. I haven't seen them. But so the answer to your question, who knows? I think, you know, it's probably going to be a rough first quarter. And then I hope by the second quarter, things will start to get back to ramping toward normal. And certainly by spring, I hope we'll be back to business.
I hope so, too. Jim Giannopoulos is the chairman and CEO of Paramount Pictures. Thank you for doing this, Jim.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kim.
And that's the business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program. Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.